Dip, 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 dip. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Dip, 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 dip,
Good evening, this is the Labor Exchange, and I'm Dennis Kreese, a member of the Boulder Area Labor Council, AFL-CIO. The subject of tonight's program is the Colorado Legislature 2016, update on workers' issues. With us is a very special guest, Kirsten Forseth, Political Director, Colorado AFL-CIO. Kirsten, before we begin our interview, I know you want to join me, and I know all workers and their families within the Colorado AFL-CIO want to extend our sympathy and our condolences to all the victims, families, and members of the Orlando, Florida community, especially those in the LGBT community and also those in the Latino community. So with that said, now this difficult statement, Kirsten, let's get started. Could we talk about your background in this context? How long have you been political director at the Colorado AFL-CIO? And what previous experience did you have that made this new position a good fit for you and subsequently all union workers and their families within the Colorado AFL-CIO?
Yep. So I started with the Colorado AFL-CIO full-time in December of 2015, so it hasn't been that long at all that I've been with the AFL. I am still learning at a very rapid pace. There is a lot to learn within the union and a lot of people to know within the union. So I'm excited to be here and really enjoyed the first legislative session.
Which union did you join to become part of this process?
I joined SMART, the sheet metal, air, rail, transportation, and I'm on the transportation side.
Okay. Kirsten, let's get into some more background. For this KGNU listening audience, could you discuss your work and subsequent intensity involved with monitoring labor legislation during this past 120-day session of the Colorado Legislature 2016?
Yes, absolutely. So prior to this, I worked for the Colorado State Senate as their chief of staff for the Senate Democrats. So I worked for President Carroll for 2 years, and then I worked for President Morse, John Morse, in 2013, and actually worked on the defense against the recalls in 2013 as well. Prior to that, I've done a lot of consulting. I do a lot of campaigns, which can include increasing mill levies and bonds for libraries or schools. I also worked for a United States senator in Montana, Senator Max Baucus, who's now the ambassador for China. So I've mostly had political background, and because I have a lot of time at the Capitol, I actually was able to transition very easily into this job and make it easy for our union members to not feel like there was a big hiccup happening in terms of communication, but also the issues that matter most to the union.
And if I, based on our conversation, I may be corrected, but you're a native to Montana?
I am a native of Montana.
And you're a Grizzly, I think.
Yes.
University of Montana? All
yeah,
right.
Yep.
That's good.
Go Grizz.
I told you I went to Rocky Mountain Labor School there back in summer of 1980. It was great. Love Missoula. How many other union political coordinators were assisting you in this ongoing massive effort? And did you coordinate with other socially progressive pro-labor organizations as well?
So in Colorado, we do a very good job of keeping communication lines open amongst all progressive organizations. But at the Capitol itself, we probably have, you know, 3 to 4 people who are there full-time or at least 3/4 time monitoring legislation, testifying, keeping an eye on what's happening, either defense or offense. And outside of that, we have some great community partners in FRESC, 9to5, who we work with a lot at the Capitol. Also, America Votes. We end up working a lot with them on voter ID issues, attacks on voting rights that we see every legislative session. And so we're lucky here in Colorado to have a great collaborative team that works well on progressive causes. And we have a tendency to look at issues in a broader perspective for working families and not just try to narrow them down to, well, this only affects this small little union, so why should it matter to us? We really tackle everything with the broader perspective in mind.
Yeah, and that's good. I saw that there was some primarily out of the public sector, you know, some people, like you said, full-time or three-quarter times union people that were helping you.
Yes.
So not good to you be carrying the load all by yourself. Let's get into the content of the show, Kirsten. Colorado Legislature 2016 update on workers' issues. And the first thing I have is 2016 state Senate votes. So with that said, could you give an update on the final outcome on the following four legislative bills? There were 13 total that the Colorado AFL-CIO followed. And the ones I have are Senate Bill 1654, 59, 70, 83, and they are local government minimum wage, authority of local government to promote affordable housing, and promote prohibit discrimination, labor union participation, and government-issued ID for voting.
Yep. So the Colorado AFL, just me, I ended up monitoring about 58 bills during the session. These are the top 13 that I felt like best represented the views of the Colorado legislature in terms of how we really look at our legislative candidates and hold them accountable for what we believe are our union values. And so these ones, I think, really narrowed down clearly how people vote. It really represents where their values lie. And so there were a couple of attacks on voter ID. We had Senate Bill 83 and House Bill 1111. Both of those require a photo ID in order to vote or register to vote in person and during same-day registration. Both of those bills, and you'll keep seeing this as a reoccurring theme across the United States, they seem very benign. They come across as just being, well, of course, you know, you need a photo ID to do almost anything in Colorado. Why wouldn't you need one to vote? The problem is the majority of people don't actually, well, not a majority, but a portion of people don't have a photo ID. They either don't drive, so elderly, this really impacts. So they either don't drive, so they've never gotten a driver's license, or they've never found a need to have one. On top of that, you have ID requirements overall, which are problematic, like the elderly, again, having problems with birth certificates and being able to produce proper birth certificates that allow them to get a proper photo ID. Essentially, what it ends up doing is limiting the opportunities for people to vote. And at the same time, it does not and has never been proven to actually reduce any sort of voter fraud that happens. And in Colorado, we actually have less than, it's like 0.01% of voter fraud that actually ends up happening here in Colorado and being investigated. So instead, what these laws have a tendency to do is disenfranchise, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of Coloradans from actually voting and under the guise of being protecting against voter fraud. So both of those bills, we ended up being able to defeat in the House, in both of them in state affairs, which is great. The ability to maintain control of the House and Democratic control was really important for bills like this that are extraordinarily hostile to not only working families, but they attack the overall voting structure of the state of Colorado and could end up flipping where we see people align with our values end up either winning seats that they shouldn't or are good people losing seats that they shouldn't.
The local government minimum wage, you know, that really irritates me because I wish that would happen because I know that here in Boulder, probably in Denver, and some other communities in the state, particularly in the recreation areas, the mountain areas, they would, if they had control of, you know, of that, there would be some really good minimum wages in these communities.
Yes. This is one of the classic examples that you'll see back and forth where hypocrisy happens in the Colorado legislature, where they will argue on the floor of the Senate until they're blue in the face that they want local control until it comes to stuff like this. So we also saw this in rent control as well, which was another bill that Senator Uliberry ran that actually would allow municipalities to determine whether or not they could implement rent control measures in areas that, where they're particularly having problems, like in Vail and Aspen, in those resort communities where people can't afford to live. And both of those ended up dying in the Senate state affairs. As a result, they don't agree with the principles. And so regardless of whether it's local control or not, they're not willing to give it back to the municipalities.
All right, then. And just the other one here I had, in it, the prohibited discrimination, labor union participation, you wrote this up. That you're just being very nice and kind. That's a right-to-work bill.
Yes, it is a right-to-work bill. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who don't know, who listened, a right-to-work bill basically says that if you come into a workplace that has, that you've had union members vote on having a requirement of participation, at least some sort of fee needs to be paid into the union to represent you in contract negotiations for wages and benefits, that you would not be required to pay into that in order to help facilitate the benefits of the union. On the reverse side, what the effect of this bill is, that it also requires that the union represent you. So if you do end up getting fired from a job or you're disciplined or something, then the union still has to represent you, even if you're not paying into the system. So the intent of a union is, you know, to collectively come together to support a common cause around increasing wages and benefits and workplace safety conditions. And what this does is it's a true attempt at just attacking unions overall in the state of Colorado.
Great job on getting that defeated, but you're going to see that again. It comes up every year. Let's talk about the 2016 State House votes. And as before, can you give an update and final outcome on the following three legislative bills? We already talked about one, the photo ID that I had mm-hmm. included here, out of the 13 total that the Colorado AFL-CIO followed. And the three I have here are, the first one is House Bill 16-1656, extend pay transparency, protection for all employees. And then 1288 was industry infrastructure grant program. And the last one I have down here is 1345, low-wage employer corporate responsibility act, which I believe my state rep, Casey Becker, sponsored.
Yes, she did. She did a wonderful job. Those first two bills regarding the pay transparency actually ended up passing. And that one received bipartisan support. And essentially what it does is it allows for and regardless of what your situation is within your company, particularly management or executive level, that you are allowed to divulge your salary and benefits to your employees or fellow coworkers in order to ensure equity in the workplace. The problem is, under Colorado law right now, you could actually be terminated or disciplined for exposing your salary. This issue actually gets at pay discrimination in the workplace that you will see most prevalently amongst the male-female relationship, but particularly it has a profound impact on African-American and Latino community. So women of color make even less than women of Caucasian descent. So that's the intention of this bill, is to really shed some light and allow some transparency so people can advocate on their behalf. 1288, the bill regarding doing apprenticeships here in Colorado, there's a large national movement as well as one here in Colorado to try and provide a secondary path for people coming out of high school, that they are not just automatically being forced into college and that's the only path that they can take, that there are options as they're graduating and they're moving into a career path that can be high paying as well as secure and provide a pension and healthcare benefits for their family. The union has always historically been involved in doing apprenticeships, and they were primarily created out of safety in the workplace. And now we're seeing a big, broad movement to incorporate more apprenticeships across all sorts of sectors, healthcare, banking, you know, some of the financial industries. And they should be well supported, I think, by the unions, but also at the same time providing support for where the union has already been providing these pathways for people out of poverty, and that they're not just dropping out of high school and or, you know, coming out of high school with no career path. So this bill we actually ended up testifying in support of, because it was a larger, broader conversation about how we can, the state can provide grants and we can receive private funding in order to encourage more apprenticeships in workplaces.
And Casey Becker's bill, that got out of the House, but not out of the Senate.
No, yeah, it did not make it out of the Senate, unfortunately. That was a great bill. And what it does is a low-wage worker bill. And the intention there is that there are companies here in Colorado and also nationally who essentially get a free ride when it comes to healthcare. And they have figured out ways around not only the Affordable Care Act, but ways of exploiting Medicaid. And there's a firm here that in Colorado that actually will help companies figure out how they can reduce hours and keep people in a nice little box that forces them onto Medicaid. And therefore, the company does not have to take responsibility for providing health insurance. Unfortunately, these are some of our worst corporate actors that we'll see here in the state of Colorado. And, we needed to put a halt to it. So the intention of this bill is to impose a fee on any company over 250 employees that is pushing people over onto Medicaid. And then that fee would go right back into Medicaid to reimburse taxpayer dollars, which have been sucked out of the economy through these bad corporate actors.
All right, then I'll be right back with you. For those of you who joined us late, this is Labor Exchange. I'm Dennis Kreese, a member of the Boulder Area Labor Council, AFL-CIO. The subject on tonight's program is Colorado Legislature 2016, update on workers' issues. With us is a special guest, Kirsten Forsyth, political director of Colorado AFL-CIO. Kirsten, just to finish up this portion of the show, the Colorado Legislature, could you discuss and explain how the State House, 34 Democrats, 31 Republicans, was a better chamber for passage of pro-labor legislation? In the state Senate, 18 Republicans, 17 Democrats, not in the same mindset. And with that said, how frustrating was this one Senate vote for you in the Colorado AFL-CIO?
I think gone are the days where we used to see moderate Republicans who truly sided with workers. And time after time, we had legislation introduced in order to help working families. Paid sick leave that would allow a mother with a child to stay home with her sick child and not lose her job, was defeated in the Republican-controlled Senate. We had a vote on the Senate floor during the right to work debate, which prohibited employers from denying bathroom breaks, from applying physical restraint, like making people sit in a room and hear anti-union conversations and from consulting firms that are hired in order to bust the union. So very simple things like even just requiring that people have access to bathroom breaks were defeated on the Senate floor. So we're not just talking about the ability to figure out where we can find common ground here. It just doesn't exist. And as much as you try and weave that basket and find where you can make this happen for workers in particular, the voting record isn't there. And so as you go through this election season and you keep hearing, Republican members of either the Senate or the House mirroring talking points around working families, they are just simply talking points because every one of their votes did not reflect where they actually believed working families should be in Colorado.
All right, then, Kirsten, let's move on to this. I really like this document that you prepared. New laws that impact the union 2016 legislative session. So let's discuss the detailed document that you prepared. And could you comment on the first four topics? We don't have to take a lot of time, but the first four topics were education, workforce development, elections, and workplace changes.
Absolutely. So this year we did see yet more attacks on public education in particular. And the tactic that ended up happening this year that was different from previous years are not just supporting charter schools, but would actually take money away from our non-charter public schools and put them into charter schools. The problem with this is that currently the funding formula for our regular public schools is deficient already, and now you're taking money away from them and putting them into charter schools, which also receive all sorts of waivers in order to bypass Colorado state law in terms of having teachers who are certified, having particular buildings, requirements around testing. They have all sorts of waivers, and they're able to receive private funding. And this is something that public schools, regular public schools that are not charter schools, are not allowed to have. And so when you have special exceptions for charter schools, they really need to be standing on their own 2 feet in order to survive and provide their own funding model. And these ones came in under the guise of charter school equalization is what they call it. Overall, this hurts not only our students in our schools, but our teachers ultimately who need to be paid and have a long-lasting career in order to provide training and resources to be the most effective for our students. So we saw that attack under 187 and 188. Unfortunately, part of Senate Bill 187 ended up getting onto the School Finance Act. It was kind of tacked on there. It is not the most extreme version that we have seen of anything regarding charter schools. It's just regarding, announcements about vacant buildings, more detailed accounting of district services to charters, and rules for allocating some special state and federal funding to charter schools. So it was very much a watered-down version of these two bills, but we can expect these to come back, and make no mistake, they are very hostile bills towards our public schools.
Okay, could you maybe summarize with workforce development, elections, and workplace changes? I'm looking ahead. I got some other questions, yes. And we have about 8 minutes left.
You got it. So workforce development, you will see this continue to come up in this session and next session, and these continue to pass over and over again in terms of trying to improve apprenticeships and pre-apprenticeships. So keep monitoring those through the Department of Labor website if you can. Elections, we don't have a lot of changes regarding elections. The presidential primary bills ended up not passing, so that was a good thing. And school district election campaign finance reporting are now aligned with reporting requirements for general election, and so that helps overall with accountability. And then workplace changes, we did see some good things come across in terms of pregnancy accommodations, where if a woman is pregnant in a workplace, that there is a reasonable accommodation provided for her in terms of safety for her during the time that she is employed.
And we've talked about pay transparency.
Yep.
And my fellow IBEW union brothers and sisters, they're happy with what they were promoting, electrical safety.
Yes, absolutely.
So could you finish this report by just commenting briefly on the last three topics, and firefighters, workmen's compensation, and 9/11 PUC oversight authority?
So the firefighters ended up being able to pass a bill that would allow emergency medical service to providers to act as community paramedics. It means if you're in a rural area and a fire truck shows up first, which usually they do, they're first responders, that they can provide basic paramedic services to these individuals and not require that they take an ambulance and go into the hospital. So it's a great healthcare savings measure, as well as something that will help overall in rural communities with people providing quality care. And then workers' compensation. So this is going to be a longer-term conversation that we will continue to have. We're looking forward to 2017 and working with Pinnacle Assurance, which is the provider of last resort for the state of Colorado, in terms of doing studies and looking at ways in which we can improve workers' compensation experience here in Colorado. And that way we can ensure that as people do have claims, that they are moving quickly through the process and they're having it resolved. The last big issue, which is near and dear to my heart, is the 911 PUC oversight authority. The Public Utilities Commission currently has oversight over 911 in the state of Colorado, regardless of technology. What the bill tried to do was actually eliminate the ability for the PUC to regulate 911. The problem is we have been seeing over the last 2 to 3 years, in particular during major catastrophes, there are massive outages of 911. These can result in loss of lives all over the place. And so the issue with this bill was that it ended up causing the 911 community to have to come forward and try and defend themselves in terms of just talking about public safety. So this one was a real fight, and there's going to be a task force that'll be convening over the summer. And those of you who are interested in this issue should definitely get involved in talking about why 911 is important to you.
Kirsten, we may have like 5 minutes, maybe 4.5 minutes, but your overall recommendations, you have stated that labor needs to be ready for an aggressive 2017 legislative session. With that said, what is the AFL-CIO plan with the Everyone Economy Network on a quote-unquote closing the gap agenda?
So this year we introduced a pretty aggressive agenda, even knowing that the Republican Senate would probably end up killing the bulk of our bills, and which ended up being the case. What is happening, in the United States, and I don't think this is news to anybody listening, is the growing gap and the disparity that's happening between the rich and the poor. And ultimately, corporations are not being held accountable for how they're not only paying, but taking care of their employees and their families. And so when you have somebody who's working a 40-hour work week and still can't make a living and is having to go on Medicaid or food stamps, it's a tragedy for our state. And so we will be tackling all sorts of issues that we did this year as well, and we will be working with some great partners that we have in the community.
All right, then, Kirsten, two more questions, and sorry for thank you for letting me nudge you a little bit,
yeah.
Because you got a lot of stuff and you got a lot of brains and you've done a lot of work, and I want everybody to know this. The 2016 general election, what kind of special efforts are you and the Colorado AFL-CIO performing in the context of voter registration and mobilizing members along with other areas for the 2016 general election?
My primary focus for 2016 general election is actually to take back the state Senate in order to get a pro-worker agenda across. And what we saw this year was not just gridlock, but the demise of anything that could possibly move working families forward. And we just simply can't continue to watch this happen. So in terms of voter registration, it's important that people are registered at their current address. And so we will be working with union members and the general public to make sure that they are registered at their current address in order to get their mail ballot, but also not letting people get discouraged by the top of the ticket. I know that there is a lot of conversation about the presidential election. And in the state of Colorado, what has made the most amount of change here for us has been the Colorado legislature. So if we want to make a difference in terms of wages and health care and working conditions, that happens at the Colorado legislature. So don't let the top of the ticket cause you to decide to not vote down the ballot. If you need to, start at the bottom and go up.
And that's a good segue for my next question, voter turnout. For this KGNU listening audience, could you explain how a high voter turnout benefits all workers and their families, along with many progressive movements? And as you just formally said, why are local and state elections just as important, perhaps more in many cases, than federal elections candidates, including the President of the United States?
Absolutely. So what will happen is in presidential election years, we will see a very high voter turnout, but it starts at the top of the ticket. And then what happens is a thing called roll off, where people literally stop voting halfway through. They're not familiar with the candidates. They're not familiar with the issue. And so they stop voting. So, yes, if you're nervous about who you're voting for, then absolutely don't vote and do your homework. But you have the ability this election cycle to do your homework because it's coming to your house. So take some time, look at your ballot, figure out your candidates. And if you need to, take your ballot like you do your beer and bottoms up.
All right, then. Kirsten, you've done a great job. So I want to extend you this in terms of a summary. Do you have any final thoughts or comments for the KGNU listening audience?
I think the more we can get involved at the local level and in terms of our state house and state legislative races, that's where it's really going to be this year.
All right, then. For those of you who joined us even later, the subject on tonight's Labor Exchange was Colorado Legislature 2016 Update on Workers' Issues. And our guest was Kirsten Forseth, Political Director, Colorado AFL-CIO. And with that said, Kirsten, thank you for being on Labor Exchange at KGNU. And for those of you who have any comments about this show or any other show on KGNU, please call 303-447-9911. And next week, Monday, June 20th, please listen to La Lucha Sigue at 6 p.m. This has been Labor Exchange, and I am Dennis Kreese for KGNU Boulder, KGNU Denver, and KGNU.org.